Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Just another hump day, Melanie, with a little bit.
With a little bit of what?
Passover to boot.
Oh, yes, it is. And you
Passover
went out there, so I'm not sure.
Good Friday.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's Friday. Sure, you know, doesn't, it's a different year. I saw something on Facebook today. It said, well, you know, February had 29 days. March had 300 days. And April is going to have 5 years.
It's
just like, I will agree to that. But we have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs. So let's go ahead and get to the market reports today. And gold still holding in there at 1,647, down $3. Silver was up at 1,501. Platinum, 741. Palladium, down 9 at 2,211. The dollar was up 0.20 at 100.16. Crude oil was up big, 2.66 at 26.29. Maybe the little Russians and the Saudis, maybe they kissed and made up. Don't know, but we'll find out here in this next hour, I assure you. And the paper markets today, after that huge gain of 900 and a huge drop of 900, we have the Dow up 779 points at 23,433. You have NASDAQ up 203 at 8,090. The S&P is up 90 at 2,749. Someone said to me, well, you know what? You know how they're keeping that stock market up. Yeah, I do. What do you think? Well, you know, old Mnuchin's down there in the basement of the Treasury with his little laptop just creating digits on a computer, and it gets funneled up, and all that just goes right into the stock markets. And it's like,
conspiracy theory for the ages. That's left me with a smile on my face.
Well, unfortunately, it's not a conspiracy theory, because that's the only reason why these markets are going higher, with the billions of dollars that it's being pumped in there by our governments and central banks, not just around here, but around the world. They've created they began all the stimulus programs from 2008, but you hear nary a thing from anyone about the amount of money that's being spent. And how much of this money is being funneled to where, who, what, when, and, you know, it truly is incredible. But a lot of that is going into the stock market. And unfortunately for those poor guys who decide to buy on the dips. Anyway, we've got the 10-year yield, 0.76%. Japan was stronger. Yeah, hey, let's announce billions and trillions of dollars into our stimulus. Yeah, get that stock market higher. Yeah, that's good. That's good for our economies. It's good for them, but is it really good for the people of the country? No. Anyway, that's about it. We'll talk about some other things when we come back from the break. But first, let's have Wendy Wilson join us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hey, we got something interesting to talk about. We
okay.
do, guys. We're going to be talking about ancient government health care. We
okay.
are.
Ancient.
It's interesting. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going 2,000 years back, even further back. You know, because when archaeologists uncover remains of ancient cities, they can use a lot of technologies not only to locate those cities and by satellites now, but they can also analyze human remains and determine the health of the inhabitants. So ancient texts also have painted this picture of how some of these societies functioned and, you know, what knowledge got passed down to modern society of today. Now, in some instances, these pieces of the puzzle can reveal early government-run healthcare and how society was run. So we're going to check this out. We're just going to go down the lane of socialism all the way to ancient Egypt. How's that?
Okay.
Well, here
it
is.
We're on a journey.
That's it. Yep, archaeologists have uncovered enough evidence to determine that the ancient Egyptians had a healthcare system that afforded neighborhood clinics. So ancient tablets show that the workers could take a paid sick day to visit these clinics where, you know, they got the treatment, and in most instances the treatment was free. The state covered it. And we've got this new area of archaeology called osteoarchaeology. This is a new specialty where the bones of humans and animal remains are studied. And studying these bones, they have this one city at the Nile River. It's near the Nile River. It's an ancient city near Luxor. And they found labor workers of the day, 2,000 years ago, they endured a lot of grueling work conditions because of the wear and tear that's showing on their bones. Similar to the bones, really, of the European knights of the 1100s, where their bones show wear and tear up in the shoulder, clavicle, you know, shoulder blade area, where they had to beef up their muscles in order to support the weight of heavy armor for jousting and other things. So they know if you were a knight just by looking at your bones now. I think that's really interesting. And then they go and they look, usually when they uncover a town, they always go look for the cemeteries. Every village had a cemetery, and most ancient settlements had this dedicated cemetery area. And at some cities in Egypt, there were ancient tablets that detailed healthcare and even implying subsidized healthcare among the workers for even the ruling class and the pharaohs. So the Egyptian state seems to have had picked up the cost of health care on their workers who were stressed by the pressure of their physical labor. So the Egyptians kept daily written accounts of work records, similar to a time card, and they had comprehensive health care records. And due to the nature of the work required by the Egyptian state, some of these workers may not have been able to take advantage of the care due to the location they were at or for another reason. So bones can reveal when an illness occurred, and even if that person received timely treatment. So much like today, ancient workers felt pressured to go to work when they were sick, and even when experiencing a disabling condition. One mummy they found showed signs of the signs that working while they had this bloodborne infection called osteomyelitis, lots of inflammation and pain in that condition. And when you're working with injured joints like that, it compounds the damage. So that's how they know you kept working even when you were sick. So why would a worker suffer and keep working? Any ideas?
Because you have to.
Right. According
they
to...
They needed the gold.
Yeah, according to the ancient tablet writings, these state workers owed money to the state. So financially, they were obligated and forced to work to continue to work when they shouldn't have. Now, in our modern times, you might find a similar case where a person that doesn't really want to work at a specific job is working just simply to keep health insurance. So, I mean, lots of reasons to work when you don't want to. Ann Austin is an archaeologist with Stanford University, and she said, "The more I learn about Egypt, the more similar I think ancient Egyptian society is to modern American society. Things that we consider creations of the modern conditions, such as healthcare and labor strikes, are also visible so far in the past." And she said ancient Egyptian ideas about healthcare and disease are much like how modern Americans think. So I think we should take a little trip to the Valley of the Kings. Yep, most people remember the most famous pharaoh, King Tut. He was found at the Valley of the Kings. And this was there was a little work camp or village called Deir al-Medina. And it was established in the 19th and 20th dynasties. So this area housed thousands of workers, and it left evidence of how their society functioned. So in that day, the public had a common degree of literacy taught to them by the state, similar to the United States public school system. And written records show they were highly educated in things like engineering, as evidenced by some personal and business type letters they found, bills and invoices, and even some lawsuits they uncovered. So these documents survived because they were written on clay tablets. They did find scraps of papyrus as well. But this is how they're piecing together how that society functioned. So here's this village over by the Valley of the Kings. but it's not right on top of Valley of the Kings. These are all were all the this was government housing for the workers, but it wasn't right there at the same site where the tombs were found. And I'll explain in a minute. So in Egypt, the remains of mummies, not considered associated with royal families or the elites, they are being studied. So the commoner is being studied. And in the remains of the labor force, it shows that the work at the Valley of the Kings was quite brutal. So there's evidence they had a hard climb in terrain to get to the work site. So what was once a lush forest is now a desert. So they were had no road. They had to kind of just kind of muck it through all the forest and jungle, if you will. So the archaeologists are referring to that long trek that they had as the thousand stone steps from the work camp to the Valley of the Kings. But there weren't any stone steps for the workers. They had to climb rugged mountain terrain an hour away from the Valley of the Tombs. Can you imagine walking an hour in hilly terrain just to get to work?
Sounds like the Amish.
Well, it was considered an honor to work on the royal tombs, and the bones show that the joints that these workers had endured, they endured arthritis, a lot of inflammation, a lot of wear and tear from this hard work condition. Now, the workers at this location had more bone damage than the workers assigned to the cemetery for burial duty. And the unearthed evidence is showing the workers would work until they became disabled, at which time the state took good care of them, according to records. So evidence also shows that if a person was born disabled, the state found another type of work for them to do. And once the tombs were completed, the village, that state housing complex, it ceased to exist once the work was done. They all left, never returned. And here's another thing that's really interesting. No social responsibility. Does this sound familiar? Evidence is showing when they unearthed these towns that since the Egyptians were at this time point in time relied on the state for care, that the average family members were neglecting to look after older family members. So they kind of just, you know, kind of relied on the state to do that. So a will was discovered. It was written by a woman called Nanutet, and she birthed 8 children, and she disinherited 4 of her children for neglecting her in her old age. Kind of much like in America, socialism in ancient Egypt changed the way people viewed health and disease and retirement and the aging family members. I think this is just such a parallel. I'm like amazed. Plus, they also had 2 different systems. In ancient Egypt, the elite had their own separate system for their labor part of society. The highly educated professionals, your engineers, your physicians, and so forth, they had their own healthcare network. Does that sound familiar?
It does.
Right. So the state subsidized the professionals, offering them more perks. And this level of society also stayed separate from, they didn't mingle with the lower class. So the professionals were buried in tombs, whereas the labor class was not. And it's really interesting. There's an element here. The professional class did not take, if they did not take care of their aged family members, divorce was shunned. And in their professional class, there's a lot of pressure not to neglect your family or you risk being disinherited. So they didn't rely, the upper class didn't rely so much on the state to look after grandma and grandpa. Plus, guess what, Melly? They had workers' comp. I'm not kidding. In Egypt, they offered some form of workers' compensation. The professional class received better and also extensive care over the working class. So archaeologist Barry Kemp, he's with Cambridge University, he's saying that in ancient Egypt, especially in the city of Tell el-Marira, it's on the eastern bank of the Nile River, and it's about 194 miles south of the Cairo area, they found this cemetery and 400 bodies in it, and the city was dated 1350 B.C., so when laborers were building these ancient cities, it took lots of manpower, and with it came a lot of injuries, he said. So he noted that the injuries from the male workers in the cemetery due to heavy labor Also, they had malnutrition. They can check their bones for that. And also trauma, of course. So most of the injuries were abdominal-related injuries. I don't know if that means hernias or what that may mean. But then what followed were upper and lower limb injuries and spine injuries. So out of the 400 skeletons they examined, 158 of them had scurvy. So if you're hauling those heavy lime stone blocks around, they can fall on a person and cause a back problem. And it's evident in the remains what they were doing. Also, children as young as 8 were often used for labor of this kind. And their bones were also found showing wear from heavy, heavy labor. Poor things. Eight-year-olds. Yeah. And then if we look at the Egyptians and the Greeks, the ancient healthcare was a huge discussion in the ancient world. So where Egyptians thought disease was from a type of contamination in the body that needed to be purged, the Greeks looked at it differently. They thought of disease as a system imbalance. So the Greeks and the Egyptian physicians were known throughout history as being highly advanced, and much of the modern medicine actually stems from a lot of their works. Here's an example. Modern germ theory came from the Egyptians, and it showed that the Egyptians, in their thinking of disease, was external, not internal so much. Plus, guess what they also had, Mel? Guess what? They had food stamps. Yep. According to the Smithsonian, there is evidence that the Egyptian government provided, in addition to the health care and sick pay, they also provided housing, monthly payments of grain, and also provided servants to help run the home. So papyrus records show that the workers were assigned company doctors, and each crew had a physician assigned to it, especially if it was more remote. And details are telling us that each physician was accompanied by an assistant, and they were all paid by the Egyptian state. Now, according to the Smithsonian, they say among the texts, they discovered a number of records detailing when and why workmen were absent from work. A third of the absences, they say, were result of sick leave. The workers continued to receive their monthly rations from the state and were very consistent, even if the worker was away from work for several days. And, you know, we've been talking about for a while how, you know, the government wants to take over healthcare. Well, I know we're running out of time real quick, but ancient Egypt also manufactured medicines, and the elite got the more expensive forms of the medicine, and the workforce got the cheap stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, we see a lot of similarities. Healthcare is, you know, it's a lot of socialized type of movement here, and subsidies, and a lot of programs that we tend to have today. I think it's interesting.
It really is. I mean, we're not any... It is amazing how it's all the same, really.
Yeah, yeah. The names change, but it's all the same stuff. Well, we're having a Resurrection Sunday sale, so it ends on the 17th, 25% off. Call 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com. Always a blessing. Talk to you later.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Give me a call. You wanted to talk, so give me a call. We'll be back here shortly.
United States,
please stay tuned.
Kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And, of course, sign up for the weekly newsletter. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit, but, you know, before we go into about, you know, what Fauci is talking about, I just want to, Dave, I just want to just read some of these headlines that Larry Kudlow came out. Larry Kudlow said, well, we won't be able to open up our economy for 4 to 8 weeks. Okay, 4 to 8 weeks. And then you have where the CDC is looking to loosen guidelines for some exposed virus folks, I guess, so that they can go back to work. And it's just like, and I think that's what Fauci is trying to say to some degree. And I'm just thinking to myself, Dave, we'll never really have an idea of what's real or what's not real, you know, because we're going to be heading back. Things are going to be withheld. We're not going to get the facts on everything. I saw where databases were being created for those that are infected. I heard them talking about this morning that if you have the antibody, they'll issue you a pass. That way you can go to work. I guess it's the same thing as, you know, what they're trying to do to, you know, allow some people to go back so they can track you. You'll have a pass. You can go anywhere you want. So if somebody doesn't want to be tested or somebody doesn't want to give up their antibodies, if somebody doesn't want to give up the DNA, I guess you're kind of stuck at home forever. So, I mean, it's just all happening so very, very quickly. And I don't agree with tracking anybody, with having a database. And, you know, it's as we said before in this program, things have changed. We're not going back to the good old days. Things have changed. And we are entering a new era, I suppose. And, you know, we see these two-hour every stinking night with no information whatsoever, maybe 10 minutes of good information, and the rest is just a bunch of hot air and bickering. It's like, good grief. So now the doctor that they do have, Fauci, he says the coronavirus deaths will continue to climb in the U.S. this week, even as new cases near their peak. Well, everybody's talking about that the testing. I mean, I'm talking about if the testing isn't properly, of course you're going to see new cases near their peak. And the rate of hospitalization slowed down. Yeah, because they're not taking people to the hospitals. There's no resuscitate orders. Do not resuscitate orders. They're separating the ones who can survive from the ones who can die. So it's all going to have numbers on, it's going to all have impacts on any numbers that they release. Fauci said it's going to be a bad week for deaths. So my thought is, if, you know, if a lot of these, you hear these stories where some of the testing, even if you have, you know, you can have a coronavirus show up if you have a cold or if you have a, you know, a different type of a flu, they're actually being counted in the numbers that they give. And I'm thinking, well, if they're counted in the numbers that they give, then the death rate is a whole lot worse. Fauci said deaths generally lag behind other aspects of the outbreak, such as new cases and hospitalization. He says we need to keep pushing on the mitigation strategies because there is no doubt that it's having a positive impact on the dynamics of the outbreak, is it? Now is not the time to pull back at all. It's time to intensify. What else did he say, Dave?
Well, we know that the White House has previously estimated that 100 to 240,000 people in the U.S. will die from the coronavirus under more optimistic assumptions, assuming a widespread practice of social distancing. But Fauci said as people continue to practice distancing, that projection is likely to fall. I just want to get back to something you said at the top of this segment about the tracking of individuals who may have tested positive for the coronavirus antibody. And I think the key word there is tracking, ladies and gentlemen. How that, particularly if there's a database with names in it, however helpful some people might think that is, what's the difference between that kind of tracking and the type of facial recognition that's been going on in China now for some time? Yeah. And that's essentially been going on here in the U.S. You know, it's been building since 9/11 in various forms. You talk about a slippery slope. Boy, that's one I think we need to be very vigilant about in the coming weeks and months as we see what governments around the world are suggesting about moving into this so-called new normal of life as we're yet to get to know.
Right, Dave. And you know what? What they do is they'll slip it in. They'll slip it in a infrastructure bill. And nobody will pay any attention because everybody's interested in how much money they're going to be getting. And no one will know about it. It's just like the Patriot Act and all the surveillance that came about because of that. And it's right. They put so much fear in the people. I'm not even sure which fear they're using, both the fear of becoming infected or the fear of not getting a paycheck. You know, most people want to go back to work. They're ready to go back to work. And so they'll use that fear. And people will lay down, roll over, and accept what they wouldn't normally accept. And it's sad. But you're right. It's a dangerous. But, hey, you know, the new ID cards are set to be released this year. And what's really disturbing is you have Kushner behind the deal of tracking, creating a database. He is behind that. He is suggesting. That is his little baby. So tell me, people, listeners, ladies and gentlemen, what is different? What is different? You know, and I heard all about, well, I'm not going down that road. That's for another day. But anyway, let's get back to the, but yeah, Dave, it is. There shouldn't be, because you know what? If you don't want to be in that database, what are you going to become? Are you going to be an outcast of society? Huh?
You're unemployed, what? Perhaps.
Oh, you'll be unemployed. You'll be an outcast of society. Nobody will, you know, oh, what are we going to do? Where we've already seen bracelets, you know, people who've will be wearing bracelets and so forth, so where we can be identified. Are we going to have to mark our doors? How are we going to be shunned?
Who knows?
You know, and this is the stuff that will happen. And you can't, I mean, it's just, you couldn't have picked a better crisis in order to do all these things. We always wondered, well, what was the catalyst that was going to bring down and usher in all the things that we've talked about for 25 years? Well, this is it. This is it. You know, and here you have a doctor. Most everybody likes this guy. And he's talking about, you know, but he's even beginning to lighten up a little bit because he's getting pressure from the administration. Dave.
Well, the good news is in that respect that, he is still standing pat on his position that, you know, we're not ready to open up again just yet, that... let's see what happens at the end of the month, perhaps. But, you know, until the so-called modeling peak has been virtually flattened, we could be, the end of social distancing could spell a very terrible second round of this virus, particularly... come the summer months, we still don't know if this is a virus that's going to react differently in warmer weather. There's some indication that it's similar to other flus, but I haven't seen anything consequential, definitive, that says, you know, this, we should see whatever else happens by, you know, June, July, August in the warm latitudes, that things will be diminished in the virus side.
Well, you know, I'm curious, what is the temperature in Singapore right now?
I don't know, but we can find out.
Yeah, find out what the temperature is. I had to talk to a client today. He was telling me that, I don't know if it was his brother or friend, his daughter and her husband are in Singapore.
80 degrees right now.
It's 80 degrees, and they're going through their third phase.
High in the mid-80s, low of 80 all week long.
Yeah, they're going through their third round. And she says they're so locked in that police go around to see if they're inside. Nobody's allowed to come out.
There's a classic photograph. I don't know if it's made the rounds. I think I saw it on Monday. It was a UK motorcycle police officer who had stopped in some park in London where a younger-looking woman in a bathing suit was laying out in a towel getting some sun, and the officer was writing her a ticket for disobeying the stay-at-home edict of that area. It was quite classic. Wow. She made some cut about, will you at least drive me to the pharmacy so I can get some whatever that skin stuff is that, you know, makes you look tanning. What is it, tanning lotion or something?
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Anyway, we certainly live in interesting times.
We do. We do at that. So, you know, so we'll have to see where this is all headed. And I get what's going on out there. And it's, you know, we'll just have to follow this through. But you still have to be safe out there, you know, until we really know what's going on. But we can also see where we're headed. And things have changed. And things won't be the
same. Looks like the airlines are... Looks like the airlines might be headed over a cliff.
Yeah, we mentioned about this too, about the, we don't know which companies, the airlines that are going to be getting the bailout money and what the terms will be like. I'm sure it'll be a ton of money And of course, the four biggest airlines is America, Delta, Southwest, and United. And you have to throw in Boeing in there. You know, they're part of the aero industry, or I don't know if they actually keep that separate, but I know they got so many.
Yeah, I think they're talking about passenger airlines.
Passenger airlines. Well, they'll deal with Boeing on their own separately, I guess. But it's all bailouts. That's also a sure bet that the Big Four would need a lot less bailout money if they hadn't sent almost $45 billion to Wall Street over the past 5 years to keep shareholders happy. You don't think it's a coincidence that that figure isn't much less than the $50 billion airline bailout package that's being proposed? You know, airlines always get bailed out. Always. I said this the other day. Every recession, they get bailed out. They buy up each other and get bailed out.
Well, what they also do is they provide weekly transportation to 430 plus members of Congress who fly to and fly away from the Capitol.
But I mean, it's just
another indirect back pocket deal. Yeah.
But I mean, bankruptcies, yeah, are not known, are not unknown, you know, in the airline business. Having them collapse now would add even a little more instability. But yeah, you're right. But I would figure a lot of the politicians charter their flights anymore. They don't want to fly with us common people anymore. You know, they get to use their lobbyists' chartered, you know, their private jets.
Yeah, that's a big boo-boo, actually. That's a big no-no anymore.
It's
not
to
say it doesn't happen, because I know it does.
Yeah, it still happens. But, yeah, and it's amazing. And then people want to know why the stock market is higher. Oh, it drives me crazy, Dave.
Well, you know, if many of those airline companies hadn't spent lots of money to buy back their own stock to prop up their share prices, they almost certainly wouldn't need anywhere near as much money as they say they need now. That's especially true of the four airlines Melody mentioned. Almost seven out of every $8 those four airlines sent Wall Street over the last 5 years went for share buybacks. The rest went for dividends, at least based on Security and Exchange Commission filings. The main reasons companies buy back stock in the market, of course, is to prop up their share price. High stock prices not only make shareholders happy, but also increase top executives' wealth by making, you know, their shareholdings and stock purchase options more valuable. Plus, in many cases, higher share prices help trigger higher executive compensation in the form of bonuses. Because share price is, if not the main metric, it's one of the most important that corporate boards use to determine executives' compensation packages.
Hey, I hear a little music, Dave. I think we're heading into our break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Today, Dave, someone said to me, as crazy as everything is, I wouldn't even be surprised if there was a alien spaceship landing in D.C. somewhere. He said, I believe it. And it really is as crazy as all that, you know. It's so, hey, when you least expect it, you know, maybe Area 51 will eventually, maybe they'll let them out of there and surprise everybody. But anyway, can't forget what's all those satellites up there. The, you know, they certainly could be a hologram, you know. What was that project? Bluebeam, I guess it is. That's fairly interesting. Just go online, check it out. It's kind of interesting. But you know, speaking of space, and I don't mean to make light of this, but here we have trillions of dollars. There's so many alphabet programs being pumped in the system that no one is talking about. No one is giving any credence to. No one knows how much money is being sent to all these various locations, to the banks. Every once in a while, we get a little detailed number from the repo market that another $100 billion was being, you know, issued overnight. The Fed's balance sheet is up to over, I don't know, it's probably $6 trillion now. Our debt's probably close to, probably closer to $30 trillion than $20 trillion. You have Trump wanting to spend $2 trillion in infrastructure. Pelosi only wants one, but who knows how many of those $1 trillion programs she wants to create. Probably is just as, I mean, it is just bizarre. And then you have today, like there isn't anything else to do at the White House. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but there was an executive order that brushes aside historic treaties that view space as global commons to be governed by international bodies. So now, instead, the vast stores of water and minerals on the moon, Mars, and asteroids are ripe for the taking by NASA. Americans should have the right to engage in commercial exploration, recovery, and use of resources in outer space. It remarks that the U.S. had never signed a 1979 agreement known as the Moon Treaty. This treaty states that anyone mining off Earth resources must comply with laws governed by the U.N. It has never been ratified by the United States, Russia, or any other main space-faring nation. The order reaffirms U.S. support for the 1967 Outer Space Treaty while continuing to reject the 1979 Moon Agreement. Dave, did you ever hear of the 1979 Moon Agreement?
Melody does not ring a bell to me.
Did you ever hear of the 1967 Outer Space Treaty?
Well, I know that there's been some action, not that specifically, but I know back in the Cold War days, there was some attempt at space detente between the two superpowers of the time. But what else is there out there that we don't know about?
But you know what they're doing is this order clarifies that the United States does not view outer space as global commons, and it reinforces a 2015 decision by Congress that Americans should have the right to engage in the commercial exploration. Gee, one of those which companies are doing that commercial exploration?
Well, we've got Virgin, mm-hmm. Galactic, Tesla. I mean, there are several now.
Yep. And what they're going to do is robotic landers will first touch down on the lunar surface ahead of a 2024 manned mission.
To the moon?
To the moon. To the moon, Alice. To the moon. Just in time for another great election. What can possibly go wrong? I don't know. Again, it's a crazy world that we live. And anyway...
You asked what the Fed's balance sheet is. Well, as of March 27th, which is what, almost 2 weeks ago, it surpassed $5.3 trillion. So it quickly closing in on six.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it is just a crazy world. So I guess maybe we're going to go to a little bit of a different mode here, a little bit of levity. This is Dave's segment, Levity is Golden, is going to be about making sanitizer. And I think everybody has heard this story. I think we've talked about it on this program about companies opening up, instead of booze, we're going to make sanitizer.
Yep. With the dire need for masks and gowns and other supplies, and some unexpected businesses have been stepping up to help. With the shortages of supplies, businesses around the country are manufacturing things they'd normally wouldn't be making, everything from face masks to hand sanitizers. We read that NASCAR engineers are now using 3D printers to roll out face shields instead of car parts. Masks and gowns for hospital workers are being made from Major League Baseball uniforms. And distilleries and breweries, large and small, all across the country are getting into the hand sanitizer business. I mean, it is alcohol, after all. Among them is Dogfish Head Craft Brewery in Delaware. A fine craft brew, I might add. I've had the pleasure of experiencing their beer once or twice. The workers there are more accustomed to brewing IPAs. But Sam Calagione, who's the founder of the company, has a video showing how they're now bottling growlers of hand sanitizer to help their community. And he has a few tips for other businesses who are looking for a way to pitch in. Calagione says that, and these are excerpts from his video, so when I say it's him talking. He said, "I never thought I'd say this, but we're launching our newest product this week, Dogfish Head Hand Sanitizer." He said he got this email from David Grinnell, who is the brewmaster for Samuel Adams, and there's a photograph from a European distillery that had repurposed their production facility to start making hand sanitizer. And I was like, duh, this is what we need to be doing. Our engineers went to work overnight and basically built from scratch a custom bottling line just for filling hand sanitizer. And literally, by that Friday, we were shipping our first load to local hospitals in Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware. We made the first batch out of our gin and shared it with a hospital. He says, "So here's the sort of recipe that I learned that I hope will be applicable to lots of businesses around the country to help them engaged in, you know, in a positive way in this moment of crisis. Step one, you got to start by reaching out to your local or state government to understand where the need is. Two, sell it. You know, we are a business. We have a payroll. We've got bills to pay. In our instance, not us, Discount Gold and Silver. Again, I'm talking about Dogfish Brew, Craft Brew. So we're really proud that we've been able to keep all of our full-time coworkers employed. And step three, figure out a way to give back. When we decided that we wanted to provide to the state of Delaware our hand sanitizer, they were like, look, charge us market value. But we really didn't have a good taste in our mouth about profiting from the moment of crisis as we worked with the state. So 100% of the profits from the hand sanitizer that we sell to the state will be given to a fund to give financial relief to hospitality workers that have been put out of work by this crisis. Caligione concluded by saying, knowing I got to do my part shoulder to shoulder with all my co-workers makes this beer taste that much better. And then he added, just kidding, don't drink this stuff, apparently pointing to the growler of freshly brewed sanitizer. Way to go, Dogfish Head. Keep up the great work and that melody. This week's Levity is Golden.
Yeah, it really is nice to see different companies and so forth step up and help with their local areas and with their states. And there's a lot of breweries across the country that have done this. And so it's a good thing. We see the restaurant business chefs across this country that are getting together. Rachel Ray, I mean, she's doing a tremendous amount of work to raise money and also donating a lot of funds that will be funneled into the, restaurant businesses to help with employees and everything. And it's what Americans do. And it's nice to see that stuff being done. And as we move on, we see, and this is the worst thing, people talk about bank runs and everything like that. Well, I had to shake my head for a moment. Because people, and I said, we're kind of in a semi-bank run. Yeah, banks closing. But no one is taking out their money. Mm-hmm. They're putting money in their bank accounts. In. And just remember, with the fractional reserve banking, and I saw limits were being taken off Wells Fargo so they could loan more money out. Doesn't matter if any of them can qualify for their stress test. I mean, all chutes are open to keep this going afloat. So you have all this money being piled into bank accounts. And the amount of physical cash in circulation has risen, jumping 1.8% during the week that ended March 25th, increasing to $1.86 trillion absolute terms. And this is the biggest weekly rise since December of 1999, going into Y2K. Only this is more... Anyway, so that was also a frenzy. This is totally different, ladies and gentlemen. This is not Y2K. This is not Y2K. We've seen the pandemonium in the financial markets. Demand account balances, which include things like checking and savings accounts, that's jumped 16%. That's the most in 9 years, to a record of $1.9 trillion in the week that ended March 23rd. And then this is the biggest weekly increase since August of 2011. And of course, a few days before the U.S. was stripped of its AAA credit rating by Standards and Poor's, by the S&P. So kind of interesting, Dave. You have all that money, and yet that's the part. If they default on the debt, a dollar is just going to go bye-bye. And all your purchasing power goes bye-bye right along with it. So, I mean, it really is. So don't be smart. Convert that fiat dollars, or don't be stupid, I should say. Be smart and convert those paper dollars into real money. And we're talking about this pandemic. It's expected to wipe out nearly 7% of working hours globally in the second quarter of 2020. Now, this was according to the International Labor Organization. The United Nations Labor Agency said that this would be equivalent of 195 million full-time workers with a standard 48-hour work week. Who works 48 hours anymore?
Yeah, it's like 36, 37 in the U.S. right now on average.
Yeah, and I think it's lower in all of Europe. They probably only work 20. But in March, the ILO predicted that nearly 25 million jobs would be lost by the end of 2020. Now, that's just, is that ours or is that global?
No, that's a good question. I believe it's global.
Well, then I believe that that number is wrong, because I mean, we've already lost 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we're predicted to lose 20 million. Maybe that's, maybe that was meant to be billion? Don't know. Mm, however, yeah. It now believes that there's a high risk at the end of the year figure will be significantly higher. And so we'll see, Dave. What about the, what else did they say about calculating the full or partial lockdown measures?
Well, that's fascinating. They calculated that lockdown measures, whether full or partial, has affected just over 80% of workers worldwide, 2.7 billion of the world's workforce of 3.3 billion. Of course, describing the coronavirus as the worst crisis since WW2, their director, Guy Ryder, said workers and businesses were facing catastrophe. Now, they're estimating that 38%, that's about 1.25 billion people globally, work in sectors that are at high risk of drastic and devastating increases in layoffs, pay cuts, and working hours. It's not hard to figure out who they are: retail trade, accommodation and food services, and yes, manufacturing. It also said that 2 billion people in informal work around the world, most of which were in emerging and developing countries. I'm guessing that's probably taxi cab drivers, housekeeping, jobs like that were also among the most risk of losing their income.
Yeah, and I don't know why people will think, or why people talk about the V, that the economies can just be turned on a dime and all of a sudden all the debt and everything is not going to matter. But what does matter is we're out of time, because we got to leave. But I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you, Dave, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.